Now let's begin. We're in Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph. We're going to be finishing the Perek today. We're up to Pasuk Yud Zayin. There's some packets over there. We're up to Pasuk Yud Zayin. We spent actually a couple weeks already discussing this. We last week saw an encounter with an individual. The Sefer doesn't actually discuss the person's name, but Rashi, as we recall, either said it was Doeg, or some other says maybe it was Doeg's son, that reported that Shaul died, or actually, more specifically, as the verses state, that the person, the messenger himself, is the one that killed him. And he was hoping to find favor in the eyes of David, after all. I mean, you know, David can't stand Shaul, probably, so he'd be thrilled to know that I'm the one that murdered him. Unfortunately, that's not David's attitude. And as we saw in the last psukim last week, that David said, you know, you had no right to take the life of a Mashiach Hashem, of someone who was anointed, such as Shaul. And since you did such a thing, the punishment will be death. And he was killed. But not before that, we find that at first he didn't believe him. After he presented, according to some commentaries, the Nazir, that Sada, which was on the top of page 200, which we possibly could translate as the royal bracelet or crown, that was proof enough that in fact he died. And therefore he mourned the loss of Shaul, Shaul's son, Yonah's son, and as well as the Jewish people that fell in battle. And now we're going to see for the rest of this parak how David eulogizes and laments the loss of Shaul, which you would maybe think, again, all right, he's a king, you're not allowed to kill the king, but now that the king's dead, who cares? Who cares? What's the difference? I don't like him. He wanted to kill me. Nonetheless, we're going to see a very powerful eulogy, if it were. So let's begin. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayikonen David as Akina Hazos. That David lamented this particular lament, the very bottom of page 200, Al Shaul Vayonasan Bano. And he was reminding himself and the entire people around him about the loss of Shaul. Now it's interesting, the Mefarshim point out, including the Mincha Katana, which is not in our packet, he does not say that he was lamenting over the loss of Shaul HaMelech. Doesn't mention that he was a king, rather just plainly Shaul. And you can look at it in a negative slant, that's the first way, and we're going to also give a positive interpretation. According to the Mincha Katana, he says the reason why he was not called Melech Yisrael is because Hashem had already removed him of his malchus. And therefore, he was not really a melech, which of course contradicts a lot of things we said. The fact that they burned a lot of his items, which is done, as the Rambam said, only for kings. But that's one interpretation as to why he's not called a melech. The Me'am Lo'ez gives an interpretation which I like a little bit better, in that we have to also remind ourselves that David, in addition to, obviously, being a servant to the king, he was also his son-in-law. And therefore, it's possible the reason why he doesn't mention Shaul Melech is not because he's trying to belittle the fact or make fun of him that he was no longer a king or he was not worthy of ever being a king at a certain point, but rather he was mourning over the fact that he was a direct relative of his. He was related through marriage. And therefore, explains the Me'am Lo'ez, that's why it does not say Shaul Melech Yisrael. He felt the connection as a relative would eulogize and mourn. The other point, before we continue with the next pasuk, is an interesting observation brought down in the Sefer Ka'il Ta'arug that says that if you look at this pasuk, we find something quite fascinating, that he mourned over Shaul and Yonasan Beno. So what is the significance of this? It's that he mourned over both of them seemingly equally, the same, or certainly at the same time, but he puts them both together as though the level of a loss was equal. And using the very powerful words of this this saver, which is not in our packet, he says like this. He says that's a mailatsum. It's an unbelievable character trait and tremendous mida that is being displayed by David. After all, sheinocha be'ovid David kash mishal. There was no greater enemy against David than Shaul. And on the opposite side, there's no one that loved him more than Yonasan, as we see in Perkei Avos and Ethics of Our Fathers. It says an ava she'eino tluya b'davar, a love which is not connected to anything. That was the relationship of David and Yonasan. Nonetheless, hishavukan b'kinel azos sar echad b'shavachas. Nonetheless, he laments over them equally, as though that it was an equal pain, an equal loss for him personally. And therefore that shows the greatness of David, that he was easily able to forgive and to forget all the terrible things that Shaul did for him, so much so that now that he has passed away, he will lament just as much as for Yonasan. Let's continue with Pasuk Yud Ches. Possibly this Pasuk will begin this eulogy. We'll see why I say possibly. Yomer, and he said like this, Lamed Lamed B'nei Yehuda Kashas. He said, we must teach the children of Yehuda the archer's bow. Page 202. Hine Ksuva al Sefer HaYosher. You can see in the English it's also written in a more of like a poetic form, because this is actually it's being stated to stir his people. Behold, it's written in the Sefer Yosh, in the Book of Uprightness. Now, the reason why I said maybe, and now none of this is underlined because this pack was made a few weeks ago, but I'm going to try to direct you to the right commentators. If we look in the Radak, in Pasuk Yud Chet, right, which is the fourth wide line, right in the middle of that line, it says, V'yesh Lefaresh. I'm only going to see these eight or nine words. There are those who explain, Kizet Eino Minakina. This actually has nothing to do with his lamenting, his eulogy. V'tchilos Akina Hatzvi Yisrael. And really, the beginning of his eulogy does not begin until the next verse, namely Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 19. So that's the Radak says, because if you just read the sentence, what is it saying? Okay, let's start learning how to shoot a gun, how to shoot an arrow. What does that have anything to do with this loss? So therefore, that's why some people interpret this really had nothing to do with the eulogy. We look in other commentators, we see that that's not the case. Not everyone agrees to this. For example, Rashi, again on page 200, the very bottom, on the right side, V'yomru lamed b'nei Yehuda kashas. He says, we have to now teach the children of Judah how to shoot a bow and arrow. Okay, why would that be a nice way to begin a eulogy? Sounds a little bit off. So the Rashi says, V'yomru David, because David is saying, Mi'ata shenafel yibor Yisrael, now that the most powerful men, the strongest, greatest men of the world have now passed, Srichen b'nei Yehuda lamed milchama, now we have to start teaching people the art of war, in order to be able to protect themselves with the use of a bow and arrow. And similarly, we find this in the Mesudas David. If we go to the Mesudas David, still on this page, the very last Mesudas David, and the only one on this pasuk Yud Ches, where it says Vayomer Terim Hiskil Konin, before he begins to lament, Rol Amitz Libos Anashut Laval Yarech Lavavam. He saw that there was an issue over here, that people were starting to be a little bit weary, they were concerned, and their hearts were melting. L'siayish Milaharim Rosh Mul Plishtim. And they were losing hope that possibly the Plishtim, who already beat us, just a little while back, with Shaul and Yonasan, now without them, we're doomed. That's what David saw in his men, all the people that surrounded him. Says the Mesudas David, V'yomelahem, therefore he said, Hinei ba es limit es b'nei Yehuda kashas mechama, it's now time for us to learn to shoot the bow and arrow, Shalahem yiskabro al plishtim, so that we will be able to fight against the Pelishim. In fact, the Me'am always explains, and this is something which we find throughout, that as soon if you're able to defeat the stronger and most powerful people, so you're going to sit back and say, all right, we beat them a little bit, let's wait until they get a little bit stronger, we'll come and defeat them in a couple years from now. No. As soon as the leaders have died and been defeated, that is the time when the Plishtim and all of your enemies will use as the opportunity to attack. So it's not just that they died, but it's the fear of the inevitable, what will potentially happen to us in the future. And therefore, because of this, that's the reason why he begins by saying, now that we do not have these people on our side, we have to defend ourselves. Okay. Yeah.
He said, in order to teach Bnei Israel Keshet, it's in order to prepare them that now, from now on, they have to take over what is missing.
Correct. That's right.
So this is what it says. He's saying it in order to teach Bnei Yehuda.
Right.
And that's out from what happened. That everybody's now involved.
Right. That's right. Yes.
And is it Very board, good. Not that the great person passed on, but that he bore passed on? He bore the man of strength? And therefore we have to make our little yeshiva boys take an arrow and learn how to do that also.
That's,
they can't rely on that.
We can, right. Right, Gibor literally means physical, right? Physical strength, expertise on the battlefield.
Right.
Absolutely, that certainly is probably the more literal, correct translation of Rashi. Now, some people say, "Well, so why do you want to teach them the bow? Right? Maybe you want to teach them how to with a sword or something else, something, right?"
Because a sword might have to be a rich guy. But a bow and arrow, you need to do it.
It's less expensive.
Homeschool, they took them somewhere and they taught each child how to make his own bow and arrow with wood.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. So that could be.
You don't have to be rich on a bow and arrow, but you have to
But a bow and arrow that you could use during the war, you have to know how to make it and how to use it.
Yeah.
It's not on the other hand, when it comes to a sword, as expensive as it may be, at least it's a one-time purchase, right? You shoot an arrow, you're not gonna go get another, you're not gonna retrieve it.
So why? What's the answer?
So it's more saying you have to constantly replenish your weapons if you have a bow and arrow, as opposed to a sword, which may be an initial expense, but at least you'll be able to hold on to it and kill many people. A keshet is the bow, right?
Yeah.
So. But, yeah.
I find something that I don't know, maybe I wasn't here last week, maybe you did touch it. The fact that David does not call Shaul Melech, but he does something more touching. Something more in the cross, Mashiach Hashem.
That's how he refers to Shaul.
Yeah, but that demands the
anointed one.
That's it. That demands the respect
of
anybody, because it's not up to us to decide to kill him.
Absolutely.
It's up to Hashem. And if you're doing it, it's not just you're doing that against the Melech,
but
you're doing it against
Hashem. Right. Very good. So, according to the opinion of the Ralbag, since we're already talking about Shaul having died, the Ralbag actually explains that if we recall, the reason why Shaul was struck with fear was because, not necessarily because there was a bunch of people's swords, but the Pasuk specifically says that Enosh Malach, because he saw the archers that were coming close. There was something fearful about the expertise of the bow and arrow, which I guess on the surface could be because you can strike your enemy from so far away. A sword, you have to be in close combat. So the Ralbag explains like this. I'm going to read this into one line. It says, "Laminas b'nei Yehuda keshes." Why the bow? Bavor shira koach misa shol hayis besima sirasa miaharim keshes. That the shol was afraid, and that's the reason why he turned to his the person holding his arms to kill him, was because he was afraid of the arrows that would possibly come and penetrate him. And he realized that that was one area which we were lacking in our army. So Omer David, that's why David specifically said, recalling the death of Shaul and why Shaul died was because of the concern of the bows and arrows, which we didn't have. Therefore, explains the Ralbag appropriately, that's why now David says we need to improve our army in that specific area. Okay, let's now continue, not the next pasuk, but continuing on the next page, on page 202, with Rashi. Now, again,
actually, David killed Goliath with a slingshot.
Right,
so
which
that's
is
like a
it's right. It's probably it is probably I don't know this definitively. I would imagine it takes much more expertise to be able to hit someone accurately with like this than to be able to aim and shoot like that with an arrow. But if we look at Rashi, and at your leisure, it's really it talks about this as well in the English, which we're not going to see on 18, the bottom 201. But we'll move on with the Rashi. I don't want to spend too much time on this pasuk. Rashi says, "Hine k'suval sefer yashar," which is the very top. It's written in the book of Yashar, and it's translated as uprightness. What is the sefer yashar? So, and it's also brought down in English on 203, which is really this Rashi. "Halo hi k'suval sefer bracious, shehi sefer yashar. Abraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Our avos, our imahos, our avos, our patriarchs. They're known not as tzaddikim, not as those who are chassidim, but rather as yesharim, those who are straight, who are yashar," which again is also an interesting connection to shooting a bow and arrow. You don't want to, like, right? Like hitting a golf ball. You want to keep slicing. You want it to be yashar. But that's an interesting connection as well. But he says, it's written in Sefer Yesharim as follows. V'hechor miza, what is the hint to the importance in Sefer Yesharim of a bow and arrow? The pasuk says in Sefer Bereishis, Yonchab Oref Oyvecha. The pasuk says that your hand will be upon the back of your enemy. Now, what does that mean, on the back, Oref, on the back of your enemy? So, Ezu hi mulchama shimachavin boyado keneged padchato shehu mu'ul arpa. What exactly is the type of weaponry that is used in which one will experience the back? Havi omer ze keshes, that's the bow. And you can just imagine, instead of holding a sword, you have to pull all the way so that...
To your back.
And therefore, that's the... He says, al sefer yashar, it's alluded to in Sefer Bereishis, the importance of the bow. Some explain the idea of sefer yashar in Bereishis is a different idea with regard to Yaakov Avinu and Parshas Vayechi, the very last Parsha in Sefer HaYashar, in Sefer Bereishis, discusses the death of Yaakov and the blessings that he gives. And over there, if you recall, it's the Torah is not written with a break, but rather it's closed. The Parsha is a stuma, it's called. And it says that once Yaakov died, then there was trouble that befell upon the Jewish people, ultimately leading to the enslavement in Mitzrayim. So, therefore, he says like this, "Hinik suval sefer yashar." If you recall, this is how some of Farshim explained, that Yaakov, when he died, when a great leader died, all of the possible tragedies that will befall the nation, and therefore, because of that, we have to be also cognizant of this. We have to be aware that our enemies, just like the Egyptians, can easily find us in a more vulnerable state, and therefore we have to protect ourselves now more than ever. Okay, let's move on to Pasuk Yud Tes. Hatzvi Yisrael al b'mosecha cholol. Eich naflu giborim. So it's translated, Hatzvi, translated here is, O splendor of Israel, we'll see them soon in a second. O splendor of Israel, upon your heights lie the slain. How have the mighty fallen? So Hatzvi, which is an interesting translation of splendor, but if you see the Masudah Sion, it's really not the correct meaning. Hatzvi is not splendor, it's an animal.
Right,
it's a deer. And the Masudah Sion on the left again, I apologize, this is not underlined, but nonetheless, the very top left, Masuda Sion, first line, Hatsvi is Eretz Yisrael, Kuria Eretzvi. The land of Israel, another name for it, is the land which is likened to a deer. And the Mefarshim explain that if you would take a deer and you would skin it, and you would look at its hide, and you would put it side by side to the animal that you just skinned, or someone else just skinned, and you would go up to someone and say, is it possible that this hide could have possibly wrapped itself around this animal? And someone who wouldn't know any better would say, of course not. The hide is so small, it's so tiny, it's impossible something so small could possibly wrap around itself. The truth is it did, because it has the ability to stretch. And therefore, that's the idea as well. You look at Israel, which is the size of, pick your state, New Jersey. It's not that big, right? So you can look at it and say, how is it possible to be able to hold so many people? It's comparable to the deer skin, the deer hide. But nonetheless, Eretz Yisrael has that ability as well. So that's how Chazal explain why Eretz Yisrael is called also Eretz Tzvi. Okay, but again, that's, we translated it in English over here, translated as the Tzvi could also mean the glory, the splendor, as the Masudas also brings down, who inyan pe'er b'chomud k'molateres Tzvi. So it doesn't necessarily only refer to an animal, but it could also be explained as splendor as well. The Mosecha in this pasuk, which says Abba Mosecha, is inyanu mikomos gevoim v'harim, something which is a high place. Now Rashi has a different interpretation of the word Hatzvi, a completely different interpretation. Rashi says Hatzvi Yisrael Abba Mosecha cholo matzvan shel Yisrael, coming from the word the matzav, the